welcome to episode 11 of Ministry Minded, a show that seeks to reveal God's matchless grace in an oftentimes messy ministry. We are presented by The Majesty's Men, which is a friendship and mentoring community for young men who are Jesus-centered and cross-focused. Today, I'm thrilled to have on the show my good friend and former college classmate, David Brady. David is a student pastor serving North Point Community Church in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area, and it was such a thrill catching up with him and just talking about grace, about the gospel, and the ministry, and how all of those are uniquely interconnected. So listen, enjoy, and I'll catch you on the other side.
Today we have a very special guest, my old friend from college, David Brady. How you doing, David?
Pretty good, man. How you doing, Brad?
Good, good. It's so glad to have you on. It's taken us a while to get here, but I wouldn't have it any other way, man. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
It's kind of tough, so. If you can, just really quick, introduce yourself in a few words. Our listeners probably don't know who you are, but and who is David Brady?
Okay, so I am 27 years old. I just moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and I work for North Point Community Church. I work for their high school ministry, and so it's just been a great opportunity to just kind of plug in and serve the local church. I love it. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, but before that, I was in ministry for a couple years up in Chicago. Then I was a school teacher, so, and then back to school where we met. So
yeah, exactly. That's awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. But let's just address the elephant in the room that's right now, right off the bat. Why isn't David Brady on social media anymore?
I am on Instagram, but
I know.
I got off of Facebook. One of the reasons, really, honestly, it was just I was talking to a mentor of mine, and they were basically just like, hey, you need to cut out like toxic things in your life. And so one of those, honestly, was like Facebook for me. It doesn't have to be for everybody, I understand that. But for me, there's so many opinions and so many voices that I don't necessarily need to hear in my life. And a lot of those opinions and voices gave me like bad views of people. And I would think poorly of people based on some like political view or religious view or something. I could judge them on the amount of selfies they were taking or whatever. Really, it was just for me, really. It's kind of an inward thing. I just wanted to kind of choose joy. And I don't want to over-spiritualize it at all. Because it was just kind of like, hey, an election season was coming up and all this stuff. I'm like, I do not need this. And so actually, I was with somebody the other day and they were scrolling through their Facebook. And I was like, man, that was like the best decision I ever made. So it was hard for me because I love keeping track of like guys like you and just seeing where people from college and old friends are. So it's kind of harder on Instagram. But that way, Instagram is not more opinions, just kind of pictures of people's lives, and you kind of go with that.
No, I totally respect that decision. I'm just giving you a hard time. I remember we were pretty active on Twitter for a while, and then kind of went.
I got off of Twitter and Facebook at the same time. It was just kind of, I think it was right around a year ago. I was just kind of like, let's just go for it. Let's just try it. So it's been great.
No, that's so good. That decision is always tinkering around in my head too, just because you don't realize how attached you are to that sort of platform until it's taken away for a little bit. And I am so, I'm sort of put on the spot by your decision too. So no, kudos to you, my friend. Kudos to you.
No, I'm not trying to judge anybody. That was just a personal decision. So.
No, that's good. I don't think a lot of people, and to be honest, I really don't think a lot of people would make that same decision because not a lot of people have the same sort of self-awareness that, you know, maybe this would be a toxic thing for me, but that's really good that you had that sort of sense of, you know, that I need to cut this out. And I really highly commend you for that because not a lot of people would do that, especially in this, you know, sort of tech-driven age that we're in.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. You mentioned just in your introduction that you just transitioned to Atlanta and from Chicago, which is a pretty big move, which not a lot of people would make. So just talk to me about that and how God sort of worked that into your life, going from a church in Chicago to a church in Atlanta.
Yeah, so I loved, I was working student ministry up in Chicago, and I love students, and I feel like that's God's calling on my life right now. That's a gift he's given me, just to connect with students. And we've talked, but I have like a strong, like a passion for the gospel and a passion for mm-hmm. grace. And mm-hmm. I want students everywhere to know where they stand with Jesus. And because that's the grace that rescued me, and that's kind of my calling, and it may transition someday into like adult ministries or something, but for right now, like students are my passion. I love high school students. So I was loving what I was doing, loved our student ministry, and kind of over the, starting probably last Christmas-ish, I began to just, I don't know, I just had this, like, I think, I mean, obviously it was the Holy Spirit, but I just didn't like recognize it as that then. But it was more of a, I didn't know if I wasn't settling in. I'd been there for about a year and a half. I wasn't settling in. I wasn't having roots. I didn't feel really a strong connection to the church necessarily. I loved the ministry I was a part of, but the church, and it was just a difference. And I started to take like self stock in that, but the thing I came down to was I love my church. I love my senior pastor. I just didn't, my heart wasn't where his heart was at with the vision, the overall vision of the church. And it wasn't a bad vision. It just wasn't where my passions lied. And I just know God's given me a kind of just a unique connection with unchurched students and students that are far from God and don't know anything. And our church was generally geared towards the church and helping Christians grow deeper in their faith. And so long term, I started praying about it back in the winter, and I didn't really pray about it every day, just kind of once a week, probably just as kind of Lord brought it up. I just, hey, you know, God, what is this long term for me? Is it short term? What does that look like? I didn't actively go looking. I just never felt like I should be looking for something. I just want to be 100% where I was. And I was content where I was. I just didn't know. I was kind of wrestling with long term. And so ultimately, in May, I was texting a friend of mine down here in Atlanta, and we had been friends for about a year. We connected through a camp we had taken our high schoolers to, and we were just talking about life, and he just reached out and said, hey, would you, just randomly one day, just said, hey, would you be interested in working for me? And so that started a conversation where the church I'm a part of now, like, I feel like my passions are in line with, and mm-hmm. I would just recommend anybody going into ministry. Like, my first job in ministry was this former church, and so I took the job, and it was, God used it in so many ways to grow me and, like, mature me in ministry, but I just kind of, now I realize about how important it is to fit well with your senior pastor and elders and just say, hey, man, like, my heart's in line with your vision, and we're going to, like, work together to carry this out. And if your heart's not in line with that, if your passion is not that, then that's okay. Neither of you are in the wrong, but it's more of so of a, hey, you may want to find a church for your long-term growth and your long-term planting, to find a church you really, like, gel with and you really mm-hmm. sink, your heart sinks with. And so that was, when North Point reached out, I just, ultimately, long-term, I was like, the elders and the leadership of North Point, their vision is for unchurched people. And so that's kind of us. It was kind of a really a unique kind of situation, but I just kind of said, you know what, like, God, this is yours, like, open that door. And if it's not, close the door. So I just kind of started walking through doors, and ultimately they offered me a job. And so I moved down, but it's been great. And I'm learning more and more, like, so about how to reach unchurched people and what that looks like in a student environment. And so it's been great, man. It's been really stretching, because I was like, I say this, but it was like, I was like a big fish in a small pond. And then I moved to a very large pond where I'm a very small fish. And so it's been extremely humbling. But at the same time, you're just learning so much. And there's so many high level, like, pastors and leaders around you that you can kind of tap into and kind of, like, let them pour into your life, which has been amazing. So
working at Bethel, how long were you at Bethel up in Chicago?
I was there for 2 years. It was actually interesting, because the first, you don't need to know this obviously, but like my first interview with them, when they contacted, my first interview was July 8th of 2014. And my last lunch there was July 8th, 2016. And it was like, it was weird. I thought about it. I was having lunch with the same three guys that I started with. And they're like, hey, let's go to lunch on Wednesday as a final, like, you know, sort of last week. And so I went to lunch and I was like, let me look at my email. So I looked all the way back at my email and I was like, I'm pretty sure this day sounds eerily familiar. And so it was exactly 2 years from the time I started to the time I finished. It was crazy. So, but it was great. Like, and it's really hard. I would tell people, anybody in ministry, like, it's really hard. Or sorry, it's really easy to leave when things are really bad. Or there's just like a toxic staff culture, or it's not a good fit. It's really easy to leave because you're looking for anything better. The challenge in that is to stay content where you're at. Not necessarily like you don't have to love every second of it, but you say, hey, like if God resign yourself to, hey, if God wants me to be here for the next 10 years, I will submit to that and I'll do that. It's really hard to be, but if it's going really well and then there's an opportunity that arises, that's when it's really hard. So that was when it was hard for me because our ministry, God's favor was on the ministry, honestly, and it grew like 500-600% in 2 years and just blowing up and kids are seeing come to Jesus and all this stuff and strong families, students and all this. And then all of a sudden God's like, you should move. And I'm like, man, like that's, I honestly laid in bed one night. I was down in my interviews and I laid in the hotel and I was like, did I make the wrong decision? Because they had offered me the job. I was like, did I make the wrong decision? Because I loved our students. I loved our ministry. And then just through a process of just kind of like talking to my mentors and people that counseled me, I was like, this is the, and my counseling pastor actually told me, he said, you need every step in ministry to really simplify it. He said, this will help you. This is really wise. He said, to simplify every move in ministry because you can like overcloud it with over spiritualizations and really kind of just, I don't know, you just kind of over spiritualize it and kind of overthink it. He said, and he's been in ministry for 50 years. And he said, every move in ministry, if I were to go back and tell myself, he's like, and the question is this a better fit? Not that you're always searching for a better fit, but if a situation arises where a church contacts you or something, to ask yourself, is this going to be a better fit than where I'm at right now for ministry? And if it is, then pursue it. But if it's not, don't just move because it's a move. Mm-hmm. Then you're just going to move and you're not moving towards kind of his whole emphasis was move closer to the lane God has gifted you.
Yeah.
So if it's a better fit with your passions and gift set, then do it. If it's not, then don't do it. Even if it's a ball in church and you really want to, be a part of like an awesome movement or something, but if it's not a good ministry fit for you, don't do it. Like if it's a good ministry fit that fits with your gifts, your passions and your desires, then do it.
So that goes back to sort of finding your voice. And I think, you know, just from what I've been around you and I've sort of, I know you a little bit and I can know and I can tell that you found your voice and you found your sort of niche, as you could say, in this whole sort of gospel kingdom movement. And so you know what your role is. And I think that's awesome that you know that this is my voice and maybe it didn't fit with this ministry, but this ministry, I feel like I can plug in and get right involved. And I think that's so amazing that you have found that, you know, at this stage in your life, because not a lot of guys, it takes them a while to sort of say like, this is where I belong. And I think you're really right on something when you said that it's really easy to leave a church when it's a bad situation, but it takes a little bit more, it takes a little bit more time and a little bit more, you know, adeptness and maybe courage even to say, you know, things are going really well, but I feel like God is moving me somewhere else. And so that's so just amazing. I think that you were able to do that. I'm really praying for you as you're in Atlanta. But let me ask you this question. What would you say though, is like one of the biggest things you learned at Bethel in your time there? What was one of the biggest things that you sort of developed over the time that you were ministering there?
Are you talking about leadership, spirituality, like gospel? Like what are you?
Yeah, like leadership wise, what was one of the biggest things that you changed, I guess, in your time there?
Okay. Yeah, that was my first job in ministry, and I had no idea what I was doing. not a clue, and I still don't, but I have a little more of a clue now. But I was the director of student ministries at their main campus, and I'm like, why are you putting me in this position? even myself, I'm like, I'm not qualified for this. I know I love students and I know I love Jesus, but that, I don't know if that necessarily qualifies you. So I think the biggest thing I've learned as far as a leadership, number one, most important thing I think is for people to know is being in ministry doesn't make you spiritual. Some of my biggest battles personally for spiritual growth have been while I'm in ministry. I felt like while I was out of ministry, I had much more, like, I don't know. There's something about ministry that fights against your joy. I think it's because you're so heavily invested in people that you hear struggles, you hear issues, then you're getting, like, every Christian is very opinionated, and that's fine, but it ultimately weighs on you, and then you get jaded towards this person. Another bad thing about ministry, and Paul Tripp wrote about this in A Dangerous Calling, but he says, he basically warns against isolation. And it's so easy for people in ministry to isolate themselves because not very many people understand the ways and pulls of ministry, because you're getting critics, naysayers, angry parents, angry staff members, whatever. And then you're getting the weight of ministry that you have to carry and the burden of, like, watching students, you know, like, fail in this area, and you're trying to, like, carry that. And then you're personally struggling. That's why a lot of people burn out. And that's why a lot of people, they burn out to a point where they're just, they make a poor decision and it disqualifies them, or what, because ministry weighs and it drives you into isolation, because then you're thinking, well, I can't be open about this struggle because these people don't understand. They would question why I'm in leadership if I struggle with this. And obviously that is not the gospel. And that obviously that comes from a root of not believing the gospel. But that's very hard if you're consistently pouring out and nobody's pouring into you. And so that's my main thing is ministry doesn't equate spirituality at all. And so, or the fact that somebody may or may not be growing in their faith while in ministry. So that's kind of a scary thing to realize. Also, which makes you even pray more for your leaders and pastors, and that they don't walk in isolation, that they walk in openness and transparency with people that they trust and love. And so, and then the second thing I would learn is ministry, ministry is not as, if I can say this, not as sexy as most people think it is. And the reason I say that is because it's a lot of nuts and bolts, and it's a lot of practicality, and it's a lot of it is not, there is a spiritual leadership to it. I 100% understand. But I think there's a lot of practical, like, leadership things that don't come from being in your prayer closet. They come from God-given wisdom through other men and women in ministry that it's, now Proverbs said, wisdom cries at you in the street and you have to go find it. And so if you're in leadership, God has obviously given you a platform to, not develop, what's the word I'm looking for, to inspire, engage with people. But that's a platform that you should take lightly. And so if you have that platform, it's your job. God's giving those talents. It's your job to go invest those talents. And so I know pastors and I know leaders that they take the ministry and they build their ministry on their gifts, but then they fail to develop their leadership that God has given them, and their ministry hits a ceiling where they can't lead more than a certain amount of people because they don't have the leadership capacity to do so. Mm-hmm. So leadership's not necessarily that spiritual. It's very practical. So if there's a pastor that's written a book on how to build a small group team, you go read it. That's practical God-given wisdom that he's given another pastor. Not that you have to take everything, but so the first 2 years of ministry, I was like, and I still do this, it was just like I was reading and listening to everything I could get my hands on, how to become a better communicator of the gospel, how to build a team, how do I recruit volunteers, how do I inspire, like listen to everything and reading all things I could get my hands on, secular, non-secular things, people that God has gifted certain people with, and it's our job to go find that and go grow in that and go, man, what is this pastor? He's obviously figured out that Tuesday nights or midweek or something is not really good for students. Why? What's the reason behind that? Not that you have to follow that, but to understand what they're saying and take concepts and principles that you can apply to yourself. how do I lead people well? Because God's given you to lead students and adults now. And now I'm, as a 26-year-old, figuring out, how do I lead adults that are older than me, 40, 50-year-old small group leaders that are looking to me for leadership? How do I lead them well? How do I lead them right? How do I inspire them to be great leaders for students? And so it's different. It's not as easy as people think it is. Now you have your shot in ministry, be lazy, but I think pastors that work hard, God blesses. I mean, I think God really does bless hard work, and he blesses commitment to investing those talents, those two talents that he gave you, or the one talent he gave you. Say, I'm going to invest those back into the kingdom, and I'm going to return double. And I think it's easy to coast in ministry, but I think a lot of people hit their ceiling in ministry because they fail to go do the practical things. Mm-hmm. And they think it's more spiritual. And there's a spiritual side, definitely. But I think there's also a very practical side that says, I can't be burning people, and I can't be a dictator, and I can't be micromanaging. And that's just leadership.
Yep.
And how to have a hard conversation with a volunteer, how to learn what to recruit for out of a volunteer, and what to look for, and how to inspire and lead. And those are all things that are found in God-given wisdom outside of the Bible, and that's found inside the Bible. But I'm saying, in the American church, there's more than enough resources to go out and learn what you need to learn about ministry.
Yeah.
And so those are the main two things, I would say.
I like that because, you know, a pastor isn't any good if he stays in his study. And I think that's right. Kind of what you're getting to, is that a lot of guys, they have these grand ideas about ministry where you just study and then you preach this really amazing message on Sundays. But obviously, ministry and the ministry, especially to students who are going through a lot of things that even I and you weren't going through when we were in high school, ministry is a lot dirtier than that. It's a lot messier than that a lot of times. And it happens more so on Monday through Saturday than it does on Sunday. Yep. And I think that's what I like about what you're saying, is that and going back again to Paul Tripp, is it's not in isolation. It's not a pastor in his study. And that's what it means to be any sort of pastor at any position. Right. It's what he does with his people, how he shepherds his people. Yep. And that's so important. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and to know what your people are going through, you have to be in with the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you can't go up to your mountaintop and come down with your Ten Commandments every Sunday. You have to be in with the people, and that's a mess. Like, that's 100% messy, and we get frustrated by people, and it's much easier and safer to not engage with people. But, my pastor always asks, what does love require of you? And love requires you to get in people's messes.
Yep.
And share with them in that and say, hey, I understand, and be there. And whatever that mission or message that you have, which for me, it's grace. Like, that's my opportunity that's what love requires of me, is to be in that mess with people and be places you don't really want to be at 9 o'clock at night, and make the long drive to somebody's house or whatever it is. But it's a lot. Ministry is a lot different than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I love it, but I can understand what a mentor of mine, before I left Greenville to take this first job in ministry, he looked at me. He was a pastor. He's a teaching pastor at church. And he said, you're going to love working in a church, and you're going to hate working in a church. Mm. And I didn't understand, because I'm like, no way. I love the church. I love ministry. And now I completely understand 100% what he means. And it's just one of those things that you're like, I get that now.
Yeah.
And so, but that's, and you obviously know that. You've worked in churches long enough to know, like, the good, the bad, and the ugly about churches. Yeah. But so, and I would say, like, another, like, my last thing, I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot, but.
Talking.
One of the last, I think it's essential for any person in ministry, if they're leading a ministry, volunteer driven or not, like, to have absolute 100% clarity on what you are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of churches, most churches actually try to do way too much.
Yeah.
And I said earlier, Christians are very opinionated and they have their issues with everything. But if your senior pastor or your elders are crystal clear on their vision, it's the Chipotle, I call it the Chipotle factor. Chipotle is crystal clear about what they're trying to do. They have burritos and tacos. That's it. Then you have, on the other hand, you have Golden Corral or whatever your local buffet is, where they're trying to do 150 different food items, and all of them are mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
At best. But if you go to Chick-fil-A, they have one thing they're very, very good at, and that's what they're good at is the chicken sandwich. And they don't try to be McDonald's. They don't try to have beef. They don't try to have like all these things. They say, hey, we're about chicken. And that's what we're about. Chipotle, we're about burritos. What that does is it gives them absolute clarity. So somebody could come up and say, hey, dude, there's this amazing breakfast sandwich. It's with sausage. And they're like, that's not what we're about. That's not even in the picture. Mm. So with churches, for a pastor, an elder team, to, or a deacon team, whoever it is, to say, this is what we're about. This is what we want to do. We want to reach this person, this specific audience, or we want to reach this person. This is how we want our ministries to look, to be very crystal clear. And then when outside voices come in and go, you should do this, you can defer and say, that's a great thing, but that's not what God has called us to do as a church. Mm. But there are, this is the beauty of the body of Christ, there's 15 other churches within 30 minutes that have those types of ministries. And so it disarms people, and it also gives you a soft landing to say, hey, like, I understand where your heart is. Maybe a Grace Community Church down the road is maybe a better fit for you, because that's their passion. I know that pastor. He loves God, loves the church, and it's about that. So maybe like you should go there and start serving there if that's where God has really inspired you to move. But this is what we're about. And so I think a lot of churches get frustrated, and staff people get frustrated on church staffs because, and members, because they feel like their church is not going anywhere, and it's because their church is doing 15 different ministries and they don't know where their focus is. Like, my church is crystal clear, small group ministry. Like, that's what my church is about. And so they have their care team and they have things that the church is for, but ultimately they focus, they hire and staff towards and focus all on small group engagement. And that's the only numerical goal we have as a church, is the percentage of our people fully engaged in small group ministry, which means they are in community and walking with fellow Christians in community and growing in their relationship with Jesus. And so it's very crystal clear. We have weekend services and then small group engagement. And inside those other groups, you'll find care for things, and you'll find men's groups, and you'll find women's groups, and you'll find, but family ministries is on the weekends. And so we're about building families. And so it's very crystal clear, and there's no debate. Like, we're, the vision and mission of my church is we want to be a church that unchurched people love to attend. And so that's crystal clear. So everything kind of filters through that vision. Mm-hmm. There's a million different churches out there that do a million different things really well, but that's not what God has called our leadership team to do. And so we just stick to that and trust. I mean, I just went to a church yesterday just to kind of check out their student ministry in Atlanta, because they're good friends of our church, and I had a free Sunday, and so I wanted to roll down there. And so I went down to the city, and I asked them, I said, what are you guys about? And he said, we are about growing our students in deeper into the Bible through like mentoring and discipleship, and that's what we're really about. And that's in contrast to our church, which is more so about like a soft entrance for unchurched students. And that's fine. Like, if that's the beauty of the body of Christ, a church doesn't have to be all things to everybody. They can focus, because there's a church, there's more than likely a church in your city that does something different than your church, mm-hmm. and that their pastor is really good at, or whatever it is. But you don't have, I think the misnomer in ministry is you have to be good at everything, and you can't be, because you don't have enough resources. So pool your resources and go, we're going to be good at this one thing. And so it's like the blue ocean strategy. Instead of focusing on the one island that's out there and go, let's try to be like them. Like, hey, there's a vast blue ocean, and we can just create our own island here, and we can just be good at this one thing and let wherever God's directed your heart. So, I mean, I could be 100% wrong on that, and I'm young in ministry, but that's kind of where I've landed in the past couple of years. So,
no, I love that, because that keeps people unified and keeps people saying that this is our goal and this is what we're trying to do. And I think it's a natural thing, and not besides just ministry, any sort of team you're putting together, if you don't have a unified sort of vision for what you want to accomplish, people are going to be doing different things, and ultimately it's going to be almost like a cancer for that team, that it's not going to thrive and it's not going to succeed. But one thing I wanted to go back on that you touched on earlier is, just because I liked what you said, and I think it's really important, is the fact of transparency amongst leaders, especially ministry leaders. It's not often found a lot of the time, just because of exactly what you said, is that I feel like I'm going to be judged if I, you know, admit to having this sort of sin or whatever. And so I know, you know, we're both young guys in ministry, but how would you approach, you know, one of your volunteers or someone like that who's with you in ministry and they confess to you something like that? How does the gospel sort of inform you on how to deal with that? Because I think a lot of people don't know how to handle those sorts of situations.
Okay. Yeah. I told my bosses the other day, and I said, this is going to sound super cliche, but I'm about grace, and grace is where God met me, and grace is what pursued my heart, and grace is what ultimately like sustains my walk with Jesus, and that's also sanctifying me, is continued running back to the gospel. And so the most impactful moments of my life have been when I was guilty as charged, and God met me with unrelenting grace. And multiple times, and I can give you very specific instances when I felt this and where this grace met me. So when I deal with hard situations, or I run into whatever the issue is, I told my boss the other day, he said, where are you at with this? He kind of asked me this very similar question. I said, this sounds really weird, but I said, I'm going to gamble on grace every time. Mm-hmm. Like if I go down, if I make a mistake, it's going to be because I believed in grace too much, if that's even possible. I'm not saying me go down personally, but like if I'm going to make a wrong choice of whether or not to like believe in somebody or forgive somebody or extend mercy to somebody that didn't really deserve it, I'm going to gamble on grace every time. And I'll fall on that every time because I'm fearful of the fact that if I ever lose sight of where God brought me from and how far I was from him and how far I was running from him, my heart, like, I'm very fearful, like, I'll lose that and I won't extend grace to people like God extended grace to me. And there's those parables in the Bible where, you know, the guy that owed a lot of money got his debt forgiven. And then he went to the next guy down the line and said, you owe me like $5. And give me that $5. I'm not going to show you grace on that. And his master was just like livid with him, you know? And I remember that every time, like, man, I don't ever want to come down. And now there are certain situations where you have to have a hard conversation. And for instance, like our small group leaders, we have a family covenant and they know, they sign on the dotted line, like we're expected to abide by these rules. And there's obviously horizontal consequences for certain actions. But every time I think you choose, you abide by whatever the rules are. Obviously there are rules and there are consequences for certain actions, but I would want somebody to know like, hey, you may have lost like maybe a position, or you had to step down from a position because of a certain situation, or you're struggling with something, or you want to take a, you know, family issue or marriage issue, whatever it is. But I want you to know this has nothing to do with how I think view you as a person. This is simply for the sake of the ministry. But for you personally, this does not change your standing with me. And I think that's the same way God views us.
Yep.
And there may be certain consequences for certain actions. And there, you know, my grandma told me one time when I was real little, I always remember this now. She said, you can choose your sin, but you can't choose the consequences. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. But you don't know the consequences when you do something, but we know as believers in the gospel, like that does not change God's perception of us. Our human standard does not change God's perception. And so maybe you have to take a hit in humility and just step down or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I want people to know in that moment, listen, like this does not change who you are before God, and definitely won't change who you are with me. Mm-hmm. Because if you know the depths of your heart, Brad, you're that same guy.
Yep.
You're that girl. You're that person. And once we stop thinking that, that's where you're in a really dangerous position, I think. And so, I mean, if it's like a middle of the fence issue, like, I don't know. Like, I'm just going to gamble on grace. I'm going to go with it every time because grace ultimately draws back people. And harsh, I don't want harsh law. I don't want that for myself. I mean, sometimes you have the harsh consequence, but I do not want harsh law and harsh, like, angry legalism. And that's the tendency is when people fail, Christians, we're the worst at shooting our own. And it's like, man. So I don't know. We've all seen people in ministry, you know, like fail and have moral failures and whatever. And it's like, man, I know that's me. Like we've all seen our whole life. And it's like, that's me, but except for the grace of God.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I ran into a situation a couple of years ago with some people in our church that some really heinous things came out about one of the members of the family, and like heinous enough to where serving prison time and all that. And I had a family member come up to me because it was like a 2-year process. It was happened right when I got there, and it was still going on when I left. And a family member came up to me as I was transitioning out of the church. And I just spent a couple years just loving on the family, loving on this person, even though they were headed to prison time and for what they had done. And the amount of tears I saw in that conversation, like myself and with these people, like they couldn't believe they were like, we're so undeserving of why you would still accept us and love us. And that was just, it wasn't me. And at first you're angry about the situation. Why would this happen? Why would they do that? Like, I don't understand. They're hurting their family. Why, you know, all that situation. I don't want to go into the details, but because it's their story. But I just, the whole time I kept thinking, this is the kind of person Jesus ran right to.
Yep.
This is the kind of person in the gospel where everybody else was like, you're outcast of society now. You're literally going to be in prison. You're not acceptable in culture anymore because of your crime. And I kept thinking the entire time, this is who God would run to. This is who Jesus was walking the earth. He would be at dinner with this family and he would be loving on this family and saying, hey, like, understand what you're going through, but that doesn't change who you are to me. And exactly. So if you can keep that, and there's a humility there and there's some grace there. And there's also some like reality, like you have to own up to the consequences.
But I love
somebody, but somebody as a person should never walk away feeling less of a person because of a sin they've committed. And that's ultimately the goal in every conversation is, is this person like confident in who they are in Jesus right now, even in the middle of failure? Because that's ultimately what will sustain you. And we tear down people all the time. It's like, man, geez, people, like relax. You know, so anyways, that wasn't to like blow me up. That was just God's grace. And I just try to always remember that.
No, that's good because I like what you said is sort of what I like to say is that our earthly doing can't affect our heavenly standing. Because once you believe that there's therefore now no condemnation for you in Christ Jesus, nothing can affect you. Nothing can affect that standing. And just like you said, just remembering sort of where you came from, that keeps you humble in moments like those. And, you know, sin is filthy, but thankfully Jesus isn't afraid to get his hands dirty. Right. And that's what I'm thankful for. And so just like you were saying, and for ministers out there, they shouldn't be afraid to get their hands dirty either. They should reach into those situations just like Jesus did for them. And that's where ministry happens, I think. And I'm so happy to hear that you're doing that. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I say one more. I say this, and this was super scandalous when I first said it at my old church. I said it for the first time, like one of my first sermons I ever preached. And I said, even if you were to go out tonight and sleep with somebody you were not supposed to sleep with, married person, not married, doesn't matter. It's kind of like a taboo in Christian culture, obviously, to do that. I said, your hard work every day is that next morning, let's say I have on Friday, your hard work is to wake up Saturday morning and believe, somehow radically believe, that God looks at you and says, you are my beloved son or you are my beloved daughter, and in you I am well pleased. And that is completely scandalous. But what God says about Jesus, he now says about us because of what Jesus did for us. And so that's the gospel. Not to say that there won't be consequences, not to say that you should go do that, but that's your hard work the next morning, is waking up and going, confessing before God, saying, this is what I've done, but somehow, in your grace, God still looks at me and says, you are holy, spotless, blameless, righteous. Your standing with me has not changed in the middle of your absolute failure. That's completely scandalous, but that's grace.
Yep.
And somehow that pertains to us too. And that's the hard work. But as me as a minister of the gospel now, and you as a minister of the gospel, is to go and be in the middle of that situation and say, I want you to know this is true of you, and speak life into that person when they shouldn't deserve, they don't deserve it. They don't understand it. But if you say, hey, I really need, if you don't even believe it for yourself, I'm going to believe it for you.
Yep.
And that you, God looks at you just like he looks at his son Jesus now.
Yep.
And that's the radical grace of the gospel, and that's the gospel. And if we don't believe in that, then we pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, Christianity.
Yep.
And you pay the piper, there's a scorecard and all that. So.
No, I love that, just because it sort of reminds me of the story of David. And so technically, me and you and ministers everywhere, we need to be like Nathan. We need to be right there in the midst after David has failed, and he's failed miserably, considering his position. And David and Nathan was right there, and he gave him law, and he told him, hey, this is where you messed up. But then he immediately gave him the grace to say, the Lord is still there, and he's waiting for you, and you are a man after God's own heart. And that's what's amazing to me about that story, is that David fails. King David fails the most impossible way to think about, that this guy would do that. And then he's afterwards called a man after God's own heart.
Yeah.
That's grace right there.
Yeah, it is grace. And it gives us hope.
Exactly.
It gives us hope in our failures.
Exactly. So. Now, sort of just transitioning a little bit now, let me ask you, so we went to the same Bible college, obviously, in the Southeast, and let me ask you this, just because I've noticed myself, and I can sort of tell just by the way you talk, is the fact that over the last 6 years, if I'll just share it, I have sort of what I like to call, like, going back to Jared Wilson's Book of Gospel Wakefulness, I've sort of had like a gospel sort of awakening in the last 6 years or so, just realizing that yes, I was saved and I was under gospel preaching, but it wasn't the same sort of gospel. And realizing that, wow, this is a lot different than what I was being taught, you know, in school and by all these sorts of things. And so I would ask, maybe how is where you are now different from where you were then? Or maybe I can ask it another way, is what's sort of the biggest change for you since leaving college?
Yeah. I wondered that for a long time, because the way I was raised, I believe they preached the gospel. Mm-hmm. Like, they preached the gospel for salvation, I say. After that's a different story, because they would preach, grace by, grace through faith, and that was the gospel I accepted Jesus under. It is 100% impossible with the pure motives to follow Jesus by rules alone. And I think that's where the disconnect was for me, because I grew up in a Baptist church and I grew up, the good people loved God, had great hearts. But when I accepted Jesus, I literally went, I felt the freedom of the gospel. I felt all these things at 15 that I didn't like realize. Like, why do I feel free from my past? And then what was thrown at me, I was like, man, how am I supposed to act like a Christian? And what was given to me were a bunch of rules. Look this way, be this way, act this way, don't listen to this, don't go here. I failed at that. Even like two, three weeks into my salvation at 15, I'm like, I was just very defeated, because I was like, I thought well, now I have to maintain this right relationship. I got the right relationship and I'm in for eternity, but now I have to keep that. And so what happens is you get behind the eight ball so much, you just are like, okay, eventually give up. So self-admittedly, I didn't hate Christianity, but I definitely pushed it aside. I remember telling, we had a friend, you and I were in the same kind of friend group there for a while with our society, but telling a guy that we played soccer with, I said, hey man, like, I think Christianity is good for some people. I wasn't mad at Christianity. I didn't hate it, but I was like, but I don't think it's for me. Like, I've never had that like experience. And so, or I don't even know what, I just kind of gave up on it just because I was like, there's so many things and I know I'm not good enough to do all these things. And so, I like to say they got grace right for salvation, but after that they said it was basically up to you. And they would never say that in words, but there was definitely a culture of performance. And if you didn't measure up, if you didn't behave, you didn't belong. And what changed it for me was going into my senior year, I worked at a summer camp and the director of the summer camp said, hey, we need you to read this book. And the book was Jesus Plus Nothing Equals Everything by Tully and Chavision. And it was as if the scales were like, well, I read it for a summer and I read like 3 or 4 pages and I put it down and I'd be like, man, I got to reevaluate my life. This is a game changer. And I realized I had known the Bible my whole life. I tell people this, I knew everything there was to know about the Bible, all the stories, all the parables. I mean, I heard it all. I was in church like 15 times a week, it seemed like. My dad was a deacon. My mom was an accountant in the church office. I went to Christian school, youth group, everything. And I knew it all. And I was as if that summer reading Jesus Was Nothing, it was as if God just took the scales off my eyes layer by layer by layer. And I started to understand that Christianity and the Bible was about Jesus and the gospel and grace. And I was like, wait, I don't know anything about Christianity. Because if this is what it's about, this is the most freeing and radical message I've ever heard. And Tully would say things like, your identity is not found in things. It's found in Jesus, and your identity is not found in your performance. It's found in Jesus' performance. And if Jesus won for you, you're free to fail. And I was like, this is the most freeing thing, because I felt like I always had to win. I always had to be like this extraordinary Christian. He said, he says those 5 lines in that book of, since Jesus was extraordinary for you, you're free to be ordinary. Since Jesus won for you, you're free to lose. Since Jesus, you know, like all that stuff. It was like, what? Like, this is crazy. And I just remember the freedom of that message that year. And I clicked with me. And thankfully, like, I've just kind of grown it over the years of like, grace saves you, but it also sustains you throughout the Christian life. And when you have a problem, to face every problem, every struggle, every temptation, every setback with the gospel, because the gospel has the answers. I believe that Jesus' death and resurrection has every answer to every question or struggle or temptation or sin you'd ever find yourself in. And if you can submit it to the gospel practically and go, how does the gospel practically work itself? For instance, anxiety. Now, I understand there's just like clinical anxiety and I understand you need help and doctors and stuff. But for me, I struggle with anxiety. And so how do I take that anxious thought and submit it to literally the obedience of Christ, which is the gospel? How do I submit to that and practically going, okay, I'm worried about something I can't control. But actively, I can take that anxious thought and go, if I can trust Jesus in the middle of something that seemed with no control, that seemed like the world was ending, the Savior died, the Messiah died, if I can trust him for that and for my future and for my life, and I can trust him for my past, I can trust him for this moment, whatever that situation is. And that's how you actively take the gospel and go. And it's a hard work. It's like mentally submitting that anxious thought to the gospel and going, take that, I'm going to submit it. And I'm going to submit it how? You have to say how. Like, how's the gospel? Like, mentally, how's the gospel approach anxiety? How's the gospel approach this temptation or this control issue, whatever it is, whatever you struggle with, to learn what that looks like and fight that battle through the gospel, it'll lose its power in the gospel. Not that it'll go away, and it may come back, but you take it and you submit it again. You take it and you submit it again. And it's like, it's an ongoing struggle, but that brings freedom. And it brings answer. Like, it may not give you like the clarity in life, the 100% clarity in life you're looking for, but it definitely, that's the growth, is submitting yourself to the gospel. And that's how I've changed. And I think that's what changed for me. And I don't like hate the way I was raised. I just think that's where they took a misstep, mm-hmm. was that it somehow became about your performance. Mm-hmm. Somehow it became a little bit of a pharisaical ideal of, oh, I got to follow some rules and check some checklist.
Yep.
And really, that's not it. Jesus checked all the checklists for us. So, and, sorry, no, that was a lot.
No, that's perfect, because I've had the similar experience. And in fact, this is a good segue, because the last time I saw you was at 2015 Liberate Conference, believe it or not. And we just randomly ran into each other, which
was crazy.
I know. It's a really small world. But what was your biggest sort of takeaway from that whole experience and that whole weekend? If you can think back to that time.
I can't remember very many details. Other than I remember it was a battle, because I had just started. I mean, I was within my first 6-7 months of ministry. And my boss and I, Mike, actually, when we were in the interview process, he said, what books have like really impacted you? And I was like, Jesus Was Nothing. He was like, dude, me too. What's your background? So I told my background. He had a very similar background. This book had the same impact on his life, almost the same timeline. He's about 6 years older than me, but same timeline in our life. Like, why is this happening to me? It was happening to him. So we both like, man, we were like, we connected like on the gospel and the grace center teaching and all that. And so we're like, man, we got to take a break from ministry, because we were getting hammered, because we were, I worked in the church was Reformed, and there, I love Reformed people. Their theology is rich and orthodox, but there is a sense of legalism in some corners of the Reformed world, and that I felt. And I was like, man, we need to preach a scandalous grace, and we need to watch students come from death to life and realize who they are in Jesus and all this stuff. And we were like preaching it, the scandalous grace, and like loving it. And kids were growing, and you could see just kids come alive, and people were coming, being attracted to that message. And so we went to a Liberate Conference, and everybody's like, yeah, but there's things you have to do. We're hearing this from home. Like, there's things you got to do. I think you're getting the grace thing wrong. You're too taking too far. And I just remember being so convicted. My boss and I talked about this. There's two instances. We were so convicted by some of the things we had like said, and like things that we were going through, like sanctification was happening. And my boss looks at me, he's like, man, you really believe grace convicts you and it changes you. Like, that's the message. People think, oh, you're now, this is the argument always, you know, you can license a sin now. And it's like, no, man, if you actually believe in the grace, like there's a conviction from the Holy Spirit. Like, oh man, yeah, I got to actually walk out this grace in my own life and in front of people. So that was kind of big. I remember that conversation. That was kind of a big takeaway for me. It was like, man, no, this grace message is working, because it works in me and I see it working in other people. Yeah. And then the second one, I was sitting in the lobby at the La Quinta Inn down the way from Old Coral Ridge, and just super cheap. There's tons of people there for the conference. And I heard two old ladies talking, elderly ladies, and they were probably 60, 70. I'm thinking about 70, 60 is my mother's age. So they weren't that age, but probably 70. And they were just over coffee right before going into session and all that. They were talking, and I overheard them. Right in the table next to us, she was like, man, this has completely changed my view of Christianity and reignited my passion for God, like this whole like gospel movement and grace movement. And I looked at my boss and I said, that's grace. Mm-hmm. Like, a 70-year-old person does not change their mind about religion. They don't change their mind about the way they do church. They don't change their mind about what they believe, because they don't, because the older we get, the more settled we get. And the fact that this lady was confessing to her friends, like, man, this changed me. This changed my perspective. This changed the way I view Christianity. Like, I had no idea. And I was like, man, that's grace, because only grace can move a 70-year-old mind that has been settled and set in their ways, taking that and going, man, like, there's something different. There's something freeing. There's something. So that was really cool for me. I was thinking, man, like, nothing in the world could change that person except for grace. Grace moves that heart, and grace changes that. So that's kind of, that was my two distinct memories from that. But I can't, I remember the coffee was good.
No, that's awesome, because we have a really similar sort of timeline on how we've sort of quote unquote awakened to the gospel. Because I was really awakened to it in 2012. I was given from Tolian actually a free copy of his book One Way Love right before it came out, and I read that before I read the other one. And once I read that, it just opened up a whole new world. I had never heard of guys like Paul Tripp and some of the people he was quoting in his book before. And so I read it and I was like, I need to read that. And then I need to read this. And it just opened up all these different avenues. And I was like, this message is so, you know, for lack of a better word, liberating. And I was like, I can't believe I hadn't heard it in this way before. And I just remember that, and that's why, and I think I can sense the same in you, that's why I'm passionate about getting it out to young people. Because most of the time, they're not taught that type of message. They're not taught that type of grace, because usually it's, we need to make sure they're disciplined to not have premarital sex and to not do drugs. That's essentially what it boils down to, youth ministries. And that's not the gospel. Even for them, that's not the gospel. And yeah, we don't want them to do that. We don't want them to mess up in that way. That's our passion, but that doesn't happen by preaching law. It doesn't happen by preaching rule.
No, I absolutely 100% agree. There, I can't tell you the amount of people that I have, as over the years, just speaking of this and freeing this, or like speaking of this, of the freeing gospel, like students that have like, wait, like Christianity is about the gospel? Like, I thought that was like for salvation. And they're like, no, that's not the ABCs of Christianity. That is Christianity. Yeah. Like, this is about Jesus. This isn't about us. This isn't about our performance. It's not about our rules. It's not about this pastor down the street. Like, nothing. It's about this guy named Jesus and what he did at the cross. And for them to go like, yeah, but to get over that hump. And I, that second summer at that Christian camp, we walked with my campers. I had about 9 campers that summer. It was more of a discipleship heavy. They were there for 3 weeks at a time, and we walked through Jesus Plus Nothing. And it was like this freeing message for me. So I'm like, want everybody to grasp this. And I kid you not, Brad, about every 3 to 4 months, I have one of those students text me that are now like graduating college or nearing ending college. They were in high school at the time. And they have reached out individually, like just randomly, like, I don't know what might think of it, or new season of life or whatever. And they said, I want to, like, almost verbatim, it's really interesting. So they said, I want to thank you for helping me understand the gospel that summer, because that has, that stabilized, like, their Christian walk. Because for a lot of students, it, and young people, it's if it's dependent on your performance, I mean, it goes up and down, depending on the retreat and depending on the season, depending on the summer camp you go to. I mean, you're like, your walk with Jesus goes, but what really stables it is, you'll have those moments of, oh yeah, but what really stables it is like this belief in the gospel. And that's kind of what carries you from, you know, receiving it all until your death, and then allowing Christ to work in you. And, but there's a stabilization there of going like, man, this is not all dependent on my performance. So I don't have to like live in shame and at the lowest of lows. And I can like believe in the gospel. And I don't know another way to say it, but I just think it's just, it helps to understand the gospel. It helps people navigate the Christian life with stability. And I mean, not just stability, but victory, I would say, but just more of like a sense of calm, a sense of peace, and a sense of, you know, I believe in the gospel today for this situation, and that will sustain me today, even if this doesn't go right for me, if I do fail or that person fails me. It's like, man. So I don't know. That's, I could probably, should probably figure out a better way to say it, but So that's kind of where I'm at.
No, that's good. And we're almost out of time here, but I just want to ask one last question because I like, and I probably know where you're going to go with this just based on our conversation, but as you know, the Ministry's Men is it's just a brotherhood of guys that just really love Jesus and they're passionate about getting the message of Jesus's performance for them out to other young men. And so if you were allowed to only say one thing to an audience of young men, what would that one thing be?
One thing. Let's see. I think I would say, this is what I would say is, it's so hard for guys our age, younger, maybe, you know, whatever, just early in ministry, early in life, kind of, you know, new to things. It is man's blood, it's in man's veins and DNA to be defined by what we do and defined by the success we have. And this is, sounds super cliche, but it is, it's our struggle as men. I think we really struggle with being defined by what we do and the success. And if you lose your job, like there's a weight on you that not only like financially, but there's a weight of I'm not living up to the expectations of what people expect of me. And so as guys our age, I think it's so important to, I mean, if you, man, you know this and I know this, but if you live in the gospel, like to believe it in the worst of times, that our identity and our foundation is built on this guy named Jesus, who is our reputation, who, you know, is everything we would ever want to be and more, to rest in that and go, man, like that's somehow, that's what God looks at me. And it just, I think it just, it redefines what you consider success. Like, you know, your job is a success in some ways. You know, you want to provide for your family. I understand that. But there's also, if that doesn't go well, if you lose that, then you lose everything. But you can still lose the job or lose the, you know, whatever, the influence or whatever it is, and still be rock solid on this. Hey, I'm good with God because of what Jesus did for me. And that sounds super cliche and it's super hard to live out. I understand that. That's like more than words there. But man, and this preached to myself, if I can be defined by what Jesus did for me at the cross and not for my success in ministry, man, your ceiling goes so much higher and your ministry goes so much deeper. Because then you're able to preach that same message because you actually believe it. And it doesn't just become words. It's like, no, man, I'm living this right now, like the day to day. And so that's the only thing I would say. I mean, if I had to give somebody advice, that, or not advice, but just a word of encouragement, man. Like, if you are in ministry, if you're working as a pharmacist or a drywaller, like, doesn't really hinge, nobody's opinion really hinges or makes a huge difference. Like, what really ultimately will carry you is what God thinks of you, and we know what He thinks of you. So that's kind of what I would say.
That is powerful stuff, man. David, thanks for coming on. It's been such a, like, this has been really thrilling for me to just talk with you again and just realize again just how passionate and you are for the gospel. And it's just been really encouraging to me. So thank you so much for making time for me. And we will definitely see you again.
And again, thanks to David for making the time to come on the show today. You can't follow him on Twitter, but you can catch him on Instagram. Be sure to follow him at drbrady12. Again, at drbrady12. And again, thanks for listening. As you know, this show is presented and produced by the Ministry's Men, along with the good help of my good friend, Ryan Northfield. This is a ministry which is entirely listener-supported. All the media you're consuming on the blog and through shows like this is done by guys who just love Jesus. But we have a lot of other plans and projects we like to accomplish, and so if you'd like to help us with that, be sure to visit themagicsmen.com/shop/donate. Offerings of any size are most welcome and greatly appreciated. Be sure and hit that subscribe button in iTunes, and if you're feeling really gracious, consider leaving us a review. Those ratings and reviews go a long way. Thanks again for listening, commenting, and subscribing. I'll see you on the next episode. Blessings.